Hey, this is Brandon Curry, IFBB Pro, and you're listening to Advices Radio Network.
Advices Radio Network.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of It's Just Bodybuilding. I'm your host, Big Ron Partlow, and with me is my co-host, and currently sporting a much thicker and better beard than me, Dusty Hanshaw.
Well, that's what it's all about. I actually had somebody last week comment they wanted to borrow the beard for a couple of weeks. I haven't figured out how to do this, but in a bodybuilding world, man, money's tight. I'm going to figure it out and say, hell yeah, you can borrow it.
Was it a girl asking to borrow your beard? Because that might mean something else.
That's tricky. Yeah, I don't think she was looking for a ride. I think this guy actually wanted to borrow it.
Okay.
Face attached, just the beard.
He wanted to wear it to the clubs.
I guess so. You know, flavor saver. Who knows?
You know. So what do you think of the feedback from episode 1?
You know, man, I was stoked, especially because, let's be honest, we put it together and we just kind of ran with it. And that was always our plan, was to just. It's just bodybuilding. I mean, the title that you hit with that is so accurate because it's really that simple. And I think people would be a little surprised to know that that show and now this one, it's not like we have a big plan for how this is going to roll. It's kind of like, oh, we've got this person on or no one on.
Yeah.
We talk about a couple things. Okay, go.
And we start. Yeah. We might talk about training mostly. We might talk about something else mostly. We're not sure.
You guys are basically at dinner with us.
We just
eat food because I had to eat mine before we started.
So I thought, man, you know, we had such a good reaction from episode 1. I said, we have to start getting prepared to be more famous. And so I thought, if we're going to be famous, you know, I just wanted to see what the competition was. So I typed into Google, I said, famous people named Dusty.
Oh, shit.
And so I got a list of like the top 30 people that are famous that are named Dusty.
I think one of them better be a wrestler, you know?
Do you know who number 1 is?
Is that Dusty Rhodes?
It's Dusty Rhodes.
Ah, oh, I'm a winner.
Dusty Rhodes, the American dream, the pro wrestler, Dusty Rhodes, died in 2015. He's the number 1 most famous Dusty.
I'm coming for you.
Number 3 is Dusty Springfield. She was like a pop singer. You know, it goes down the Dusty Hill, the bass player from ZZ Top.
You were so close to me with a Hill, you know, right there.
He's number 7, you know, a couple of pro baseball players, you know, that sort of thing. And then number 16, most famous person named Dusty on the Google search, Dusty Hanshaw.
I'm number 16. I'm Brett Hull. That's his number right there.
You are listed as the 16th. You're ahead of a guy who played in the NBA, who's number 17.
Which, I mean, can we assume that the Dusty in the NBA was a white guy?
He was. Well, he might not be. I don't know. I don't want to say. It's one of those ambiguous pitchers. I'm not sure.
Just saying that'd be a tricky name for anybody else, you know?
Yeah. So you are the 16th most famous Dusty
that makes
already.
Without the show.
So then I searched Ronald, and there's a lot more famous Ronalds.
Well, yeah. So,
right. So the top 50... I wasn't in the top 50. I didn't come out. So I thought, well, I'll try Ron. Searched famous people named Ron. Still no cigar for the top 50.
You should just go with Ron Partlow or Big Ron Partlow. I think you'd have nailed that one.
The most famous Big Ron Partlow, yes. You bet. So just letting Dusty know where he is on the food chain there.
Now you know, like every 10 episodes, I'm going to be bringing this shit up. Like, I'm at 13.
Yeah. Assuming they update that page, yeah, like, so them. Often.
I'm going to call that guy. Like, hey, dude, don't fucking sleep on me. We're doing it. We're doing a podcast now.
No, definitely. So I was happy with the feedback. You know, it's funny because I felt like we just kind of did a warm-up episode.
Agreed.
You know what I mean? Like, I didn't really remember what we talked about. It was kind of like... You know, it was just one of those things. And I kind of thought, well, are we going to put this out? I don't really know if we said anything.
Right.
And then next thing you know, it came back. Everyone was like, oh, it was awesome. You know, I can't wait to hear the next one. And so we're, you know, definitely happy to be back, man. And, you know, it's exciting when you see the numbers going up every hour, just bang, 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 the uploads, boom, boom, boom. Or the downloads. What do you call them? The downloads.
Whatever. As long as they watch or listen. No, I actually had a client reach out to me and said, you know, on the what would you say makes you a great coach question you had, or you know, and it was funny because he told me what he thought it was, which was cool. But then the funny part, I go, yeah, you know, I said, we don't talk about what we're going to bring up. I said, so I just said the first thing that came to my mind. And I go, you want to hear even worse? I don't actually remember what I said.
Yeah.
And he was like, and of course he knew, thank God. I was like, oh, that's true too. I didn't lie.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, cool to see the feedback on that. And one thing I dig too is I was excited to see a lot of females that are in the industry following as well, whether they're bikini, whatever, and seeing value in what we're kind of brought to the table. So it's definitely hitting on the note of not just being meathead bullshit.
Yeah, no, I was very happy to hear from female listeners. I got a lot of messages and tags from the ladies saying, you know, I'm listening to this. And I don't know, I was sort of thinking maybe they don't want to, maybe they appreciate that they're getting like a super hardcore sort of view, and they're not being like, you know, talked down to in a way like someone's trying to market to them. You know right. What I mean? Like the alternative would be, you know, purposely softening the conversation to attract more female listeners. And they're like, fuck that. I'm tired of that. So right. Maybe that's why they like listening to us. Cause you know,
well, I think too, since you prep people as well, I would definitely take my female clients, toe to toe with the men as far as hardcore. So
yeah, exactly.
I'm concerned with offending or talking around anything that they're going to be doing. Cause of a lot of the people I train, there's a couple females that I've prepped for shows and shit. I'm like, damn, she might be fucking more hardcore than me. I don't know, you know?
Yeah. In fact, I'd say a couple of the most hardcore, like to the T, gram of rice, perfection of execution clients I've had have been female.
For sure. I agree with that.
You know?
I got one right now that actually, I was laughing because she just posted a picture. She got a couple kids. She was out at Olive Garden, and her kids were really on her about, you know, wanting her to eat. It's off season. She's going to do the Arnold next year. And she took a picture and sent it to me of her chicken from Olive Garden on a scale, kind of quietly weighing it, you know, so she could get it just right. And it was funny because I know a lot of people, their initial kickback on that is like, Jesus, live. And mine is actually kind of the opposite. I was like, man, she wants this shit.
Yeah. You
know? Because there's a time and a place, you know, I did tell her cause she is super focused. I'm like, hey, you know, when your kid has a birthday, it's off season. Trust me, celebrate, have a piece of cake. It's good for your family. But because your kid wants to go to Olive Garden, I'm down for, either eating your shit before you go or weighing it at the table, whatever it is. Cause, you know, I've done it, and I've not done it. And, I remember the very first year I worked with Chris, I was with him for 7 months. And finally I was like, hey, can I, go out to dinner tonight? And he was like, what? I said, well, we're about to start prep. And, you know, I haven't had a meal off of my plan since we started. And he was like, oh, shit. I just assumed that every now and then you were popping one in. And, of course, Chris being Chris, he's like, but do me one favor. Send me pictures the next day and tell me what you ate because I want to know what it does.
Right.
So I went out, tore it up, had, you know, I mean, I went a little far. It'd been 7 months. And what was funny about it was I sent him the pictures and he goes, all right, next Saturday, do the same thing. I had to email him back. I'm like, hey, I can't eat that much next Saturday, man. I thought, shit. He's like, we'll have a cheat meal. I was like, okay.
That was a one-time thing.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't know if I was ever getting another one of these, so I went all in.
Yeah. No, another thing that I'm thankful for is the number of people that have been reaching out that have been willing to come on.
Oh, for sure.
That's been very, very cool. And, you know, we got to touch on the fact that we have a guest on today and we had a last minute switch.
Yes. Yeah, we had fortunately, I alluded to very early that we would get Dante on the show. And I messaged him and he had told me he should be fine, but didn't know with business and things like that. But so I just said, all right, let's roll with it. We're good to go. And he followed up with me and said, hey, I got a bunch of things going on. I can make this happen, but it'd be a lot better for me not to. And I said, no, don't. We have a list, thank God.
Yeah.
So we'll make that switch and hopefully we'll line it up. It's just so difficult with him. It's kind of funny. In hindsight, of course, when I step back, I'm like, you know, I felt slightly guilty because in reality, you know, I kind of pulled a friend card. I'm like, hey, you know, the guy that doesn't have time to do this shit. Well, we're friends, so help me out. And he was definitely willing, but told him, okay, we'll do it another time. And then I start looking at my text messages, and he is like me, and you know this. You text me last night at 10 o'clock, and I'll hit you up at 4 in the morning. I mean, when I see things or when I have time and when I answer, I'm thinking, locking someone in for 40 minutes, all of our guests, is pretty awesome that anyone can just pause their life for us and say, yeah, we'll jump in on the
show.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. So I was starting to reach out to people to just line them up for Mondays, right? Like just say, hey, you know, Mondays at 10:30 PST, this is when we record. Does that work for you? Do you foresee a Monday that would be good? You know, just kind of letting people maybe get back to us and we can plug the calendar. And I had just messaged our guest today just to ask him how Mondays were. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, Mondays are awesome. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, and I was going to get back to him. And then you text me and you're like, we got a code red. we need a guest. And I thought, shit. So, you know, I was like, who do I reach out to? And luckily it worked out. I thought he just said Mondays are awesome.
Yeah. Well, how about tomorrow?
yeah. So I got back to him. I had to check with you first because I didn't want maybe you to ask like four people. And I'm like, shit, right. You know, the last thing you want is three people responding, I'm in.
Right.
So we had a little bit of like a panic there. But yeah, so I messaged him and he was like, yeah, sure, I'll do it tomorrow. So on short notice, we have Ian Valera on today. I'm very excited to have him on. He's one of the most popular guys on the circuit right now. And, you know, has just stomped his way to the kind of the first call out of every show he's in now. You know, what are you looking forward to talking to Ian about?
You know what, man? I mean, I can already see where this is going. Being that this is the first time I've had a podcast where I'm not the guest. Having had our time with Ian already, I'm already sitting here going, shit, I need another episode because we could easily do a full podcast on his coaching.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we could do a full podcast on his bodybuilding. We can do a full podcast on his life as I'll call it the Canadian fitness family up there. I mean, there's literally just so much, so many pieces. So it was funny when you get done with your time, you're like, shit, we got a lot done and there's a lot more.
yeah. You know, we had Ian for about 45 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, hit him with some good questions where he gave us these nice big answers. And, you know, he went into detail about some training and told us he finally told everyone the official story about the arm. Right. So I enjoyed that. Yeah. But you know, after it was done, I was like, man, we could have kept him on for, I mean, I could have asked him, I mean, I had like 20 more questions I could have hit him with, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows, maybe Ian can be one of our, kind of our frequent guests if we, you know, he seems happy to be here.
The way his career is going, man, I'm afraid as he climbs up that Olympia ladder, he's going to be harder and harder to get on here. Cause, you know, all kidding aside, the changes have been nuts. And I'm stoked for everyone to see what he accredits that change to, because it's so exactly what I would expect. So I'm excited to have people hear the simplicity of success once again with the bodybuilding world.
You bet. So, Dusty, you want to bring Ian on?
Absolutely.
Thanks for everybody. The Ian Valera interview, episode 2. It's just bodybuilding. We're going to have Ian Valera on right after this.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. and use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
Hey, Ian. Good to have you on. Episode 2 of It's Just Bodybuilding. You're on with Dusty and Ron.
Hey, Ron. Hey, Dusty. How you guys doing?
Really good. What's going on right now with you? TikTok.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just finished up the season for the year. You know, just taking a little time to rest and recover and, you know, get this off season started and get back to it next year. You know, just taking some time with Melissa, with my wife, you know, just to enjoy, you know, a bit of each other's company that's not in prep mode. It's been a nice little change, you know.
How do you feel about the season?
I mean, I got a lot of mixed feelings about the season, you know. I mean, which I, you know, obviously there was a coaching change that came at the end of the season, which we can discuss later in this, I'm sure. You know, as a whole, I guess I was happy. I was, you know, there were showings that I'm happy with and I'm proud of. Vancouver, I was happy and I was proud of. Tampa, I was definitely happy and proud of. You know, and then it's kind of interlaced with a few that I'm not so happy and so proud of, you know. You know, so that was kind of the frustrating thing with it, is almost like, you know, you get one right, get one wrong, get one right. And it was like alternating of like, you know, which was a little frustrating for me for sure. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, I know you weren't happy in Toronto.
No, I mean, I'm nothing against John. I mean, I think if I'd been at what is 100% for me, I can beat John no problem. I mean, I don't think there's anything against John. I think that 100% Ian beat John. And, you know, for me to see that opportunity slip away like that, is fucking frustrating. You know what I mean? You know, and for me, especially a show like Toronto that, you know, I felt like I was ready to win a show like that. And the show that's like, you know, the pinnacle of Canadian shows, you know, I mean, Vancouver's a great show, but Toronto's the show. It's like the New York Pro for the American guys,
it's
right?
It's been that's there a lot longer. Yeah.
Been longer. You know, it's a tier two show now. You know, it's just a big show. I mean, sure, the lineup in Vancouver was bigger and better. I'll say that. But in terms of like the prowess behind the title, I mean, you know, that was just one I really, really wanted to win. You know, so that was frustrating to kind of feel like I fell short in terms of the package I brought there. And to, you know, and then that resulted in me obviously losing to John, right?
Yeah. I want to tell the story about how I met you. Mm-hmm. And then Dusty can tell his first Ian story. I'm sure he's got one. But I was at the Ontario's one year. Well, I was at the Toronto Super Show, right? Which is also the, you know, at the time it was the Ontario's as well. And I was there with Mutant, and they wanted me to hand out the trophy at the Ontario's. Right. So I went to the show, and this fucking 21-year-old comes out, and he just looks insane, like as hard as any pro, like shredded to the bone, glutes, and like he's just nuts. He comes out and just annihilates everyone. And then I go and I give you the trophy, and I go, "You got a big future, kid," and you just laughed. And then 2 weeks later, you go to the Amateur Olympia in Mexico and get your pro card.
Yeah.
So you kind of just showed up like, hello, 21 years old. Yeah. That was awesome, man. It could tell back then.
I really had no expectations going into that show too. Cause I mean, that was the first like, you know, bigger show I'd done like that. I mean, you know, I'd done my regional qualifier, which obviously I won easily. You know, and I really didn't have any expectations going to that. And then even less going into the show in Mexico, you know, that was kind of like a last minute opportunity. I'm like, yeah, what do I got to lose? I mean, you know, if I come 10th, whatever, it was last minute. If I win, hey, I turn pro. I mean, you know, it's a free trip to Mexico too. So, you know, screw it. So yeah, but I mean, that provincial show was my first like, you know, big show that I'd been at. And it was definitely a great experience. I competed at, I was a super heavyweight and I was 1 pound into the supers. I think
you're like 226, I heard, or something like that, weren't you?
21, I think.
221, okay.
Or if it was a 225 cutoff, I was 226, but I think it was 220 then.
Yeah, because they flip flopped in Canada back then. They used to move it around.
I think it was 220 then. I was like 221.5. And I remember stepping on the scales at the weigh-in, and the guy's like, "Oh, like you missed your heavyweight weigh-in." And I was like, "I don't give a shit, man." I'm like, "I'll never." I'm not losing a pound. I look good right now. I'm like, this is how it is, you know? And like, I hadn't paid attention to my weight once that whole prep. I had no idea if I was 205 or 260. Like, I had no idea, you know what I mean? I don't think I'd weighed myself the entire prep. I literally had no idea.
Really?
So I stepped on the scale. It is what it is. He's like, you want to take, you know, you have I think it was 30 minutes or something, you know, you can come back if you want to drop the pound. I'm like, I'm good, dude. I'm like, if I'm going to win an overall, I got to beat all these guys anyway. So what difference does it fucking make? You know what I mean? Then I left and that was that. I mean, you know, I was obviously the smallest guy in the class, but you know, like you said, I was in really good condition, you know, and sometimes you get in those supers classes. A lot of the guys are, you know, big, tall guys, but definitely lacking conditioning, and you get the conditioning more in like the light heavies, the middles, you know? So, you know, I was a bigger guy, but still not as big as them, but just in way better shape. So I was able to kind of pull that one through.
You were in like ridiculous condition, man. Like so without a doubt, you're the best 21-year-old I'd ever seen at that point. I'd never seen a 21-year-old. I was just like, what the fuck?
Until my brother-in-law.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Bumstead showed up as a junior. Yeah. There you go.
I look at that now, and those guys that came after me, like him and Regan and, you know, and some of these guys that were competing at juniors, I'm like, man, if these guys were around, they would have fucking blown me out of the water, you know?
Well, I was just telling a story the other day about the 2015 Nationals. Mm-hmm. Was a year, my last Nationals. And the junior class top three was Bumstead, Regan, and Cody Drobot.
Yeah.
And like it was the craziest juniors. Like
all just, pros now and all under 25, I think. So it's like.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. What about you, Dusty? What's your first Ian memory?
Well, actually, I wanted to segue on all this shows you just talked about, because I'm curious, were you doing your own prep in those shows or what?
No, I actually worked with Greg Doucette, who's a Canadian IPB pro. So he worked with me for the regional show where I qualified for that provincial level show, and then the one that I turned pro at. So those are the three shows I worked with Greg at. Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that's the big question. The reason I brought that up is because so many guys, especially with a season like yours that are up and down, the question mark for a lot of people watching is, A, how? Because they know a guy like you, you didn't miss a meal, you didn't cheat, you didn't, you know what I mean? What were the changes this season that you kind of, that you think caused the misses versus the hits?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the thing was, and this will kind of segue into, I don't want to ever speak anything poorly about Matt Jansen, who the guy I was working with. But, you know, kind of some of the decisions that led to me leaving was, you know, I thought there was just a lot of like, and I know this is with bodybuilding for sure, but it just felt there was a lot of guesswork going on, you know, and it was like, and a lot of, I guess, not like trial and error, but like just trying new things when I don't necessarily think they needed to be tried. You know, like in the 2018 season, I had a lot of really good showings, you know. The Olympia, I looked great. The show I won in Spain, I looked great. Vancouver, I was pretty good. But I got progressively better every show, and we learned a lot every show. And that's a lot of, like, intel you're building to then utilize for the 2019 season. Right. And when it came to prepping for Toronto Pro, I just felt like a lot of that was, like, forgotten, you know. And it's like, you know, I just thought it was, like, we were trying to go for new looks and using new methods. Cause like, it was like, okay, let's be like a little tighter this time, or let's be a little fuller this time. It's like, but we already had a look that was pretty good. Let's just deal with those things in the last day or two. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, and then Toronto, it's basically, you know, I ended up looking, I did a ton of cardio. I looked over dieted. I looked tired. And you saw that in the look that I had there for sure. I mean, it was, my conditioning was exceptional. It was just, I was super flat and it's super tired looking, and it just didn't shine through, you know, like what I looked like in a day, 2 days out, or, you know, it was like, my look was like just gradually kind of like, you know, depleting into the show. It just was not quite there, you know? And then it was like, okay, well, we obviously didn't do that right. Let's go back to what we did do. And we kind of hit the nail on the head in Vancouver. And then it's like, let's try something new again now in Portugal after we just hit it, the head nail on the head in Vancouver. And then again, it didn't really work out. Right. So I think it's just like, you know, there wasn't like one specific thing. And I mean, you know, and this is part of bodybuilding. This is not like me shit talking anybody or anything like that. I mean, I understand that this is how it goes. And, you know, there is a lot of guesswork in this, right? Mm-hmm. But it was just like, yeah, I mean, it felt like we weren't quite using the tools that we had in our tool bag, you know, and trying new things every time that didn't quite work. And it was like, I didn't want there to be so much guesswork, you know?
Yeah, I think that when you look at a lot of these situations, I know I've done it, I'm sure Ron has too, you start altering your look for what you think. Like, basically, there's a look that Ian has that's the best look for him, Yeah. That's going to be your best look against Dexter Jackson, against Luke, against any variety of people. Altering your look won't help you other than bringing your best.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing. Like, and for me, like, we started playing other people's games. And, I mean, like, this was for Toronto. Like, we knew that it was going to be me and John. This is not saying anything bad about Josh Wade or any of these guys or whatever. But, right. I mean, the show happened. When John announced he did the show, I knew it was going to be the Ian and John show. You know what I mean? I knew that this was going to play out. You know, so then we started being like, okay, well, John's not usually known for being super, super sharp. So if we can be like razor sharp and, you know, push down, don't worry about the weight, just be hard as nails, I can edge John out on that. But then in doing so, you know, for a guy like me, like I'm not a Nathan where I'm like crazy full black guy muscle that like I could be eating 0 grams of carbs and I look full as a house. Like when I'm flat, I look like shit, you know? So for me, then we push down and then that little bit of flatness, I also lost the look of conditioning. So it was like, for me, I need to be popping full for sure. I mean, Tampa, I wasn't crazy full, but I was just like so peeled at that point. I mean, it didn't really matter. I was still reasonably full, you know, or else I wouldn't have had that look. I would have looked like I did in Toronto, right?
So one thing I wanted to point out, Ian, and I text you this right after your last show there. I said that I thought your quads were the most separated and the crispest up top I'd ever seen them on stage.
Were by far, yeah.
And it was funny because every time I ever saw you on stage, I always thought, Jesus, he looks awesome. But in his front poses, his quads don't seem to separate like they should be separating. Because I know like when you walk and you move, your quads always like pop and flash, right? And then at Tampa, when I saw the pictures, your quads were just split right fucking crazy.
I think that was more a posing thing than it was like a conditioning thing. Okay. You know, I think, and this was just a tweak that I made between Portugal and Tampa. I mean, I think before I was kind of sitting with my weight shifted on my right hip and then, you know, kind of trying to like, you know, contract my quads that way with the weight like centered or like not centered, like shifted onto one side. Where then when I just went back and evened my weight out on both legs so I could push my hips back and kind of contract both of them evenly, I got a lot more separation through them. I was able to hold it a lot more. You know, when the weight was shifted, it was like I could kind of get like one quad, but then there was no tension on the other because my foot wasn't on the ground, so I was losing the contraction. So, you know, it looked a bit better in terms of like flow to the pose, but then when you're losing the quad contractions, like who fucking cares then, you know what I mean? So when I went back, I was just like, yo, both feet on the ground, just hit it, you know, don't overthink it. I got a lot better. And obviously the conditioning helped. I mean, I was in really, really good shape in Tampa. So, you know, when the conditioning's there, plus then you make that posing adjustment, I think it went a long way, right?
What do you think, like you were mentioning, you know, you got away from things that worked. So if you had to sum it up a bit, what do you think works for you?
I think for me, like, I don't have any trouble getting in shape, you know? I think the biggest thing for me is, you know, getting me in shape early, because I think if I – it's easy for me to get in shape early and then just feed me into the show, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's it. Then I don't need any, like, magic near the end, nothing crazy like that. You know, I think that's just the best way to go about it. I mean, you know, I don't – if we just keep pushing things into the show too hard – I start to lose that look, and it's like, no matter how much you feed me at the end, I can't really get it back, you know? So I think it's like, yeah, it needs to be like an early, need to be there ready and early, like 4 or 6 weeks out, and then just slowly kind of eat into the show and gain that fullness and gain that look, you know?
Yeah. Dusty had another question, I know.
Yeah. I mean, really mine was more, lean towards your next step now, with the off season. And this is actually kind of a question from the fans that I've been getting. So I wanted to hear your take and Ron, yours as well. A lot of guys are hitting me, especially with the good old Instagram age of, you know, wanting to get huge and wanting to be 6% body fat all year round. And I kind of wanted to get your guys' plan for the off season, because as big as you already are, it is bodybuilding. So I'm assuming you're planning on getting bigger. How do you guys plan to approach the off season as far as eating and size you're putting on?
I mean, to be honest, I actually don't know the answer to this question. I mean, I just started working with the new guy for Tampa, right? Working with Patrick Tour now. So I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I haven't started my off season yet. We're kind of just, you know, doing like a little, you know, detox and kind of just taking some time right now. to recover and let my body, bring the training volume down, bring the protein down, just relax for a bit. So I don't really know what the plan is, to be honest. I mean, it was first we kind of were, taking this time, and then we were deciding what I was going to start next season with, and then we can kind of start to plan based off the time I had in terms of until I compete next. So, to be honest, I don't really have the answer to that. Sorry.
Wait, a bodybuilder and a coach who says, I don't know. Those don't exist.
Yeah, they're very rare.
I know what needs to be done. I mean, I know I need to grow, what shots I need to improve. I mean, what things need to be done. But in terms of what he has planned for me, I honestly couldn't answer that for you.
What do you do with your clients, I guess? Because the big thing I'm trying to get out to people is a feel, because Ron and I, that's kind of the point of the show, is with Just Bodybuilding, people are so obsessive. It's kind of like, what do you think, I guess, then would be some advice you would give to somebody who needs to make change in their off season, whether it be training, food, whatever?
I think the biggest thing, and I think this is why a lot of people don't take advantage of this off season time, is they don't treat it like as seriously as they would treat a prep. They treat it as like time to chill, And it's like, oh, it's just time I can eat shitty food and I can be, lackluster on my training. And, I think that's a big mistake. And I think I've made those mistakes in the past. And until I really started treating it as seriously as I would treat, that 12, 16 weeks before a show, when you're like, gung-ho, let's go, showtime. I mean, you got to treat the whole year like that if you really want to be a successful bodybuilder, right? So I think the biggest thing was just, the consistency all year, the consistency and the intensity and the training and the food. I mean, everything all year round is really what made the biggest difference. And, when I had the big jump from kind of being like, 7th, 8th, 9th in my 2016 season, and then teaming up with Matt and then, being top four, I haven't placed outside of the top four other than the Olympia in like the last 7 shows I've done, And that was just that 2017 off season. The only thing I did differently there was I was just consistent all year round. Like my meals, I'd wake up, it was like a prep. It was like, there was not like, oh, what am I eating today? Or, it was like I woke up and I had my diet plan that I ate every day. It was the same. We progressively increased as if it was, progressive decrease, I guess, going to a show, but just the opposite. Progressive with my weight training, being, systematic with that, your approach. I mean, not just like going into the gym and slanging weights around randomly. I mean, there was an actual systematic approach to that, right? So I think those are the things that really made the biggest difference, is just the consistency and the actual planning of it all, right?
I want to ask about the training, because, Dusty and I are sort of big proponents of a couple of things. And the first is that if you want to be a pro, especially, then the training has probably got to be the thing you love the most about the whole process.
Of course, yeah.
So
I got into it to begin with, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you just said a systematic approach to training, and what do you mean by that? Like, are you tapering volume up and down? Are you're making adjustments like that?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like right now, after the show, we brought my volume down to like basically the minimum effective volume. Like I'm doing very low volume, focusing on just, keeping the weights heavy, but not outrageous. And just letting my body kind of, come back down and adjust. And then this is where, will be the starting point for us to start, and I'm doing no intensifiers now too. So like no drop sets, no rest pauses, nothing like that. So this is like square one going into the off season.
So do you train to failure? Like just to failure, like the edge of failure? Is that
like maybe, the odd set here and there, but no, right now I'm not training sets to 100% failure.
Okay.
I'm saying you should, but I'm saying in this phase right now, they're like, a soft failure, it's like failure.
That's a new term, Dusty. We got a new one.
That's what most people call real failure.
Like, if I like really like, got down, maybe got a couple partials or, maybe I could do a drop set. Like I'm saying, like those things aren't incorporated, but in terms of the base set, I'm pushing until, say 90%,
Okay. Okay.
And then this will be the starting point where then we can start to incorporate, add some more volume, increase the weights as we go, start to add intensifiers, and then we can kind of build it on top of that, right?
Cool. How many weeks would you take to get to like maxed out fucking ballistic, ridiculous training?
Yeah, I mean, that really depends. I mean, really that would be something that I would kind of play more by ear and just could slowly increase until I feel like it's not – I'm not progressing within the certain set of exercises. Like I, let's say I'm maxed out on, You know, I've been doing 405 for 8 reps on incline for the last 6 weeks, and you know, I can only add so many intensifiers and stuff like that to that. Then that's when I would kind of bring down or adjust or exact stuff from there, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Dusty.
Yeah. I mean, I just love the hearing, the planning that I think a lot of guys, something we've been pressing is just whether, regardless of how you're training, I find a lot of people just walk into the gym and they're kind of like, I'm going to train chest today.
Mm-hmm.
What should I do? You know, and I mean, I'm still that guy walking around with a damn notebook, like my phone doesn't work, writing it down on a piece of paper because I still like it that way, you know?
And I think there's a lot of guys who have probably been very successful just winging it every day. And I mean, if you know you can go in there and you know, give it 100% and, you know, you remember and you can be progressive with your weights and or you're just a genetic freak, I'm sure you can get a long way that way. But for the majority of people, I mean, you know, if you want to get the most out of your training, there needs to be some sort of systematic approach to it like that, right? And I mean, for me, where I know, especially in certain spots, you know, my back needs to improve, you know, my chest needs to improve. Like there's some spots I really need to make improvements on. I mean, you know, those are the ones I really need to, you know, watch in terms of that, you know, progressive overload in the training to make sure that I'm actually improving on them. Right.
Have you ever seen any improvements in a weak point by training it more frequently?
I personally haven't. I found that didn't do a whole lot for me. I've done it. You know, I found like I did this, you know, I did this with my chest and my back in a couple off seasons. And I felt like I just got worn down. I mean, my strength, like it was like I kind of got an initial uptake from it. Like it was like I felt fuller because I always had blood and nutrients in there all the time kind of thing, you know, and I felt good for the first like maybe 4 weeks. And then it was just like I started to just decline from there. Like I felt my strength start to go down. I never felt I was like 110% recovered from my workouts. You know, and I just wasn't progressing through the movements like I was when I was just doing them once a week and giving it 120%, you know?
Right. That's something Dusty and I have discussed. I've tried a ton of frequency increases on all the body parts that I always had struggle with. And I just never really saw anything from it. And Dusty said the same thing, you know, we've talked about that before.
Yeah, no, it didn't do it a ton for me. And I mean, I know a lot of guys do it and get great success with it, but for me and I think if you're someone that doesn't train with like insane intensity, and I think for the three of us talking, we're guys that train with like really high intensity, you know, we're not guys that want to like, you know, kind of pussyfoot it in the gym. I think with that kind of style of intensity of training, and then when you're also doing so much frequency of training, I think it's just not, you know, like a formula for success. I don't think. I think if you're someone that's, you know, your training's kind of like, you know, pump training and you're, you know, getting work good, you know, blood there, you know, kind of like 80% intensity workouts. I think then, yeah, you could, you know, probably train them more often, you know, and maybe get some good results out of that. But I find for, you know, if you're really going balls to walls, it's just like, you're just going to drive yourself into a hole if you do it long enough, you know?
Yeah. So, I find I've written out training programs for clients before and they're like, oh, is this what you do? And I'm like, oh, fuck no, this would kill me. I train way too fucking hard to do these 9 sets. Exercises I'm telling you to do, but I've seen your working sets that you send me, and I know we need this to exhaust the muscle. For me, I'm like, I do a third of that, and I get the fuck out of there, go eat.
Yeah, no, I feel you. Let me just plug my computer in here 1 second.
Oh, you got a low battery, Dusty.
Look at that, shameless plug right behind him. Genius marketing with that shaker cup.
Yeah, that was awesome. I liked how you did that.
Oh, whoops.
My computer's actually charged. I was just doing it so I could.
you'll do well in this business, my friend.
Well played.
You've caught on early.
Wearing the West Coast tee right in the thing, and the team does.
There you go. You got to do
all
it.
Marketing here.
Yeah. No. Hey, if you're gonna bring it up, you know, I'll plug my gym for a minute. really happy to have you out for the Van Pro and have you at the gym. By the way, it was awesome.
It's always a great, like, you know, that's one of the biggest reasons I love doing the show is honestly to come out early and to get to train at that gym. I mean, where I live in Ottawa, I mean, it's just corporate gyms here, right? I'm like, I train in a good way for my body, like, you know, like corporate health clubs, you know.
The sight of you in a tank top at a Good Life to me is just actually so awesome.
Yeah.
I just love it.
Like, I mean, at least the one I've trained at, I've been training at for a long time. So it's like everyone's seen it. So it's, you know, I don't really like stand out that much. I'm also like, it's also the gym I train at here is kind of the one I think most of the fitnessy kind of people train at in the city.
Right. A lot of competitors and bikini chicks and
Exactly. Like men's physique guys, bikini chicks, or people that are aspiring to compete. Like obviously I stand out like a sore thumb, but I mean like Chris also has trained there for a while too. So, I mean, you know, there's other guys there, but yeah, I mean, at the majority of good lives, I stand out like a sore thumb, right?
Yeah. I wanted to bring up something and, you casually told me this story about the scar on your tricep.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that almost nobody I've talked to knows what that story is. Have you not really told it on a podcast or anything?
And like, this is actually like a running joke on my Instagram is that when I post a picture, like, you know, say a progress picture or something like that, and you can see the scar and one person in the comments will be like, what happened to your arms? All the people that have followed me for years, like jump on them with just trolling them with hilarious things. Cause like they all know I've been asked a million times. So they find hilarious when someone's like, what happened to your arm? So they're like, oh, I got in a shark and you know,
it's so funny, man. It's so funny.
They know the answer, but they know that I like get frustrated getting asked it. But yeah, no, what happened was this was, I guess, 2012, June, 2012. I used to work for Popeye Supplements. So like, you know, for those that aren't Canadian, it's a supplement chain we have in Canada. And there was a local fitness expo. I can't remember what the name of it was, but it was called National Capital Fit Day. Cause I live in Ottawa, it's the nation's capital. So it was like a little thing called National Capital Fit Day and Popeye's had a booth there. So I was there with a couple of the other guys, you know, we were working the Popeye's booth there, you know, selling product, demoing stuff, whatever, you know how it is. And they had an arm wrestling event there that was televised. And the guy that was doing like the commentating for it. And then they also had some kind of event at the end where you could arm wrestle this, you know, 6-time world champion arm wrestler. You know, so it was like people would line up and they could give it a go. This guy named Devin Laird, who's one of the best arm wrestlers in the world. You know, he does a lot of YouTube stuff. I'm sure anyone could look him up, find a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I know who he is. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got obviously being, you know, 2012, I wasn't like the size I am now, but I was still like 230 pounds. I was a young guy, you know, being the biggest guy around there, obviously everyone like coaxes you into like, oh, go give him a go, you know, like go, you know? So I'm like, at first I'm like, no, it's all good, you know? But then I was one of the girls I was working with, at our booth. She wanted to go up and arm wrestle him just for fun, you know, like two hands, get a picture, you know, that kind of stuff. So I was like, okay, I'll go and I'll, you know, take the video for you, whatever. And then once I got over there, more people are coaxing me into it. Like, come on. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do it. You know, cause like, I know like in anyone that watches or follows even a little bit of arm wrestling, muscle has really nothing to do with arm wrestling. It's like almost nothing, you know, you see Devin, I mean, he's a foot taller than me and probably weighs 20 pounds less than me. I mean, he's not a humongous guy. I mean, he's, you know, 6'6", like 240 or something, you know, 230. So, I mean, I knew in my head, like, there's no chance that I'm going to beat this guy. Like, this is pointless. So I was just like, no. But eventually I succumbed to the peer pressure. I was like, fuck it. Okay, sure. You know? So I go up and arm wrestle this guy. And I mean, he kind of is like, okay, you know, let's, you know, you're a big guy. Let me feel what you got. So I reefed on him a little bit. He didn't even move an inch. And then he's like, gives me a couple tips, you know, wrap my leg around the bench, you know, make sure you don't turn your body away from your arm. Keep your eyes on your hands, you know, just like small kind of beginner tips. I was like, okay, sure. So he's like, hey, he's like, you're a strong guy though. So I'm going to pin you now. Like with certainty. He's not like, I'm going to try and pin you. He's like, I'm going to pin you. So I'm like, okay, cool. So it's like 3-2-1. And I mean, I probably shouldn't have tried as hard as I tried. I should have probably just let him pin me and just, you know, taking it, you know, take him one on the chin. But obviously I was like, yo, I ain't going down like some punk. So I had to give it 120%. And it didn't even move anywhere. It was like 3-2-1. It was just like, poof, and my arm just exploded. Loudest crack.
That's crazy.
It sounded like someone fired like a gun in the auditorium. I mean, it was that loud. How much? There was so much tension. It was like 2 seconds of pause, and then just like crack, and my knuckles fell out this way and hit the table on the other side. And he grabbed my arm right away and was like, oh shit. He's like, I'm like, that's not good. He's like, no, that's very broken.
Holy shit. That's what I felt when I tore my quad. I felt like I got hit by a car and I heard a loud bang.
Yeah. I didn't anything when it happened. Like, because there was no, like, muscular damage or, like, anything like that. It was just a bone that broke. I mean, it was a spiral fracture. Like, my arm broke, you know, and it just kind of went out funny. And then he grabbed it. And, like, right away, I was, like, it was just, like, immediate shock set in. You know, I'm, like, what the fuck just happened, you know? So he's, like, oh, buddy, he's, like, you're broken, like, real broken. You got to go to the hospital. So, yeah, I mean, at first, it was, like, this. It was just, like, the sound, like, that really was, like, I remember it. That's the only thing I really like distinctly remember of it today is just like how loud it was, you know? Like, I mean, I've had people come up to me 5 years later and be like, man, I was there when that happened. I was like 50 yards away and I heard your arm break. I'm like, okay, thank you.
Now, how does the arm like, I mean, I'm sure you're so used to it now, but I can't believe how awesome your tricep healed because you sliced right through it.
Yeah. I mean, I got the surgery. So I broke it on a Saturday. I didn't have surgery till Wednesday. So I went to the hospital right away. I mean, because I was working an event, so they had to like bring me in an ambulance and shit, you know? So I got to the hospital and the surgeon, the ortho surgeon that could do the surgery wasn't available to do it till Wednesday. So then they basically just like shot me, you know, gave me drugs and sent me home for 3 days in a splint, you know? I just put my arm like this and just sent me home. I'm like, that was the worst 3 days of my life, I swear. Like, to date, that was the absolute worst. Because once the attrition starts to set in a little bit, you know, and my bone was like this, you know? Like, it's spiral fractured, like it turned and then, like, separated, you know? Because it's like a spiraling break and then, like, separated.
Jesus.
So, like, any type of movement, it's like, it's hard to understand until you've done something like this or, like, you know, had some kind of surgery that you can relate to. Like, I know a lot of girls that have had their boobs done could probably relate to this, honestly. It's like even pressure that's not anywhere near your arm, it like fucks your arm up, you know? Like even trying to sit up, like trying to sit up out of a chair, just like pressure on your core, like your arm will like contract a little bit and it's excruciating, you know? Yeah. So like I couldn't even move. I couldn't stand up out of a chair. I couldn't do anything really. Like I had to live at my mom's house. I was single at the time. I didn't know Melissa. I met Melissa maybe 3 months after this, 4 months after this, like later in 2012. I had to live at my mom's house and I literally like slept in a chair, ate in a chair. I mean, then she'd have to help me up and to go to the bathroom. I mean, like I felt pathetic. I mean, you know, and that was for those couple days. Now also the couple days right after the surgery, it was about the same, but yeah, I mean, you can't do anything. And like, I'd move even a little bit and it was like, you know, the bones were moved around hitting nerves and stuff in there. Cause it was all, everything was just like, oh, jumbled up. You know? It felt so terrible, you know? And then, so I got the surgery on the Wednesday, but like I was back training in 4 weeks, 5 weeks. I mean, I was back at it quick. I mean, I think I got x-rays at like 2 weeks and 4 weeks or 2 weeks and 6 weeks. No, I think it was 4 weeks. And once I saw the x-rays at 4 weeks, like I saw it with my own eyes. The bone was fused and there was a callus there. I'm like, well, it's not going to break again, you know? So I started going back to the gym. So
what did they tell you? Did they tell you could train yet?
No, they told me they said not to, because I mean the biggest part was when your arm has been in a sling, especially with like that kind of damage for this long, the hardest part is just straightening your arm again. Yeah. You know, like, arm, like all my tendons and everything were so messed up, like my arm was locked straight for, I mean, that took me a good 2 weeks to even get straight. You know, that was a big thing. So I mean, you know, I kind of had one of my buddies' mom had an accident, you know, where she'd had her arm broken in a cycling accident and had like, it's kind of like a arm brace that you put on that you can crank it open in like minor increments.
Yeah. Yeah.
I used one of those and just like kind of opened it a little bit every day until I got it straight. And then once I got it straight, I started, you know, weight training as much as I could, you know? I mean, like at first I was curling like 2.5 pound dumbbells and then like the next time I'd do it 5 pound and then, you know, I tried to bench press. I was benching the bar for a couple of days. And then I, you know, but I think honestly, getting back to the weight bearing exercise, especially like, I mean, people know like the benefits of, you know, doing weight bearing exercise for like bone density and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. You know, I think me getting back to that as soon as I could, you know, without obviously putting myself at more risk, because like I saw the bone was healed. I mean, he told me it was, you know, fused and calloused, it looked good, you know, but he was like, you know, wait a couple more weeks. Let's get you back in at 8 weeks, I think he said, to do more x-rays or check it out, or I had a follow-up appointment or something. But once I saw it was healed, I'm like, well, I don't really understand what's going to go wrong if I try and train this, you know? So, but I think that was really why I've had no issues since. I mean, I got back right away, got blood in there, you know, got the the tissue moving around, nothing's healed. You know, got some weight bearing exercise on that bone to like, you know, really firm it up. And I've had no issues at all. I mean, that was June. By the time I met Melissa in September, like I was 100% weight training, like as if it had never happened.
Right. Yeah. I wanted to ask you a couple questions about your family dynamic there with, you know, you, Melissa and Chris, you know, sitting around the table and that sort of stuff. Do you guys talk about bodybuilding at all, or is it avoided?
No, it's not avoided. Obviously, it's a big part of our life, so it's inevitable. You know what I mean? You know, especially certain times of the year. I mean, you know, like right now, Chris is prepping for the Olympia. I just came off a long season. You know, so obviously it is a part of our life. And I also coach both of them, right? So, you know, right now, obviously I talk to Chris every day about, you know, his Olympia stuff. But no, and like our regular life, it's not like, definitely not the main topic of conversation. You know, I don't think we really, it's not really something we, you know, there's the odd time we'll see something on Instagram, you know, someone will have a little gossip for 2 minutes, but you know, I mean, that's really the bulk of it. I mean, it's, you know, other than stuff that's directly related to our own preps or, you know, competing stuff, it's not a huge, huge thing. And I also like some of my closest friends, I mean, like my best friend, who's my best man at my wedding, like who lives with Melissa and I right now. Like he's as far from a bodybuilder as he could possibly be. I mean, like this guy doesn't work out. I mean, you know, once in a while I go to the gym, but like, he's just like a regular guy, you know, like he likes fish and, you know, just do regular guy shit. And I mean, he's not into weight training at all, really. So, you know, I mean, it's, you know, that's also something that's like, you know, in my life, that's not like, we're not talking about that all the time with him. Some of, you know, my friends that aren't interested in it, you know?
Yeah. I asked that because of, you know, the Instagram perception. Yeah. That people have of, you know, everyone, especially like they have that extra perception about kind of you guys, because, you know, you're all around each other a lot. And, you know, they think Dusty doesn't do, you know, anything else or think about anything else or, you know, that sort of thing. So yeah, you know, sometimes that, yeah, that Instagram perception that people have of, especially someone like you, who's, you know, a popular champion.
You know, any of our Instagrams are obviously focused on our fitness lives and our fitness career. I definitely understand that. But, you know, I mean, like, you know, my day-to-day life, other than eating meals and training, isn't like bodybuilding, you know? I mean, we got dogs, we got a home that we got to take care of. And, you know, we do stuff, you know, with our families and during the day and stuff, you know, that's not bodybuilding related at all for the most part, you know? So, I mean, it's definitely not something that outside of that, you know, one aspect is definitely not something that's a major, major part of our life. No.
Yeah. Dusty, you got one more for him?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the biggest thing that I was going to add with that little piece is, I think people forget too, because of our careers, Instagram for me is work, and I'm sure it is for you guys as well. So I like relish in moments where I can go out to eat with someone and talk about them. I'm like, oh my God, tell me more. What's going on in your life? I'm bored of talking about me, yeah. You know?
Well, this is actually, I mean, on the flip side of this, I actually have a very close friend of mine that this was like something that kind of was a very big strain on our relationship. Cause I mean, he was a big fan of bodybuilding and, you know, really looked up to me. And it was like, anytime I would go out with him, it was like, all he wanted to do was talk about my bodybuilding. And like, if we were talking to people, he'd like want to show people my bodybuilding pictures. And like, to me, it was like insufferable, you know?
Right.
So it's like, man, this is already what I live with on Instagram every day. And like, can't we just be boys, you know, and just like talk about normal shit. Let's talk about girls that you're sleeping with or whatever. I mean, I don't really care. I mean, I just don't.
Okay. Tell us more, Ian.
Exactly. See, that's what we want to talk about. You know, I don't want to talk about, you know, bodybuilding with him all day, especially about myself. Like you said, I mean, I don't want him to, you know, that's not what I want to talk about all day, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I brought it up. Just, it's funny. The thought process, it really changes. But my last question for you is this. Something I've kind of told people is, when I got into bodybuilding, and this is a vague-ish question, but what I thought I was getting into versus what I am into now is very, very different. So I was curious, in any way you want to run with that, what are some things that you've bumped into that are not quite what you assume they would be?
Oh man, that's a really good question. You know, it's hard to say because, like, you know, I think the biggest thing, and this kind of goes back to what we were talking about, social media. Like, when I started bodybuilding, like, social media wasn't part of bodybuilding yet, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think where, you know, how much is dictated by Instagram essentially now, you know, in terms of getting the contracts and, you know, how everyone's promoting themselves, like how it's all dictated by that world now is obviously something I didn't really see. I mean, I thought back then it was just like, you were a good bodybuilder, you made a ton of money, which is obviously not how it works at all, you know?
Right.
You could be not even bodybuild in this day and age and, you know, make tons of money if your Instagram is, you know, you got, you know, some good tech savvy skills, right? So yeah, I mean, that would probably be the biggest thing. I mean, it's tough to think of off the top of my head.
Yeah. Well, we'll get you on round two with the extended answer of that, but no, it's just something that I always run with because it is and I love the bodybuilding world that we're in now. And thankfully for people like me who are not going to be winning shows anytime soon, I've got my avenue to run with, but, it is a very different world in a lot of levels. And I just find, I mean, one of the big ones that I think it's laughable is everybody thinks that there's, you know, I always hear that, oh, there's no camaraderie in bodybuilding. And I'm like, where do you bodybuild?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I mean, go to shows and we're fucking off backstage. I mean, yeah, people are here to work, but I mean, the work's done.
Yeah.
And there's no defense. I'm not stopping Ian. He's not like, we show up and what's done is done. We have a good time. And I think guys are surprised when they see that half the time, depending on where everyone's going, people end up in the same place, eating, hanging out, and doing their thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I just had one more for you, Ian. You know, Dusty and I have actually trained together on the road and traveled and, you know, worked out together with No Sleep during the FIBO Expos and all that sort of stuff. You know, that whole round. What do you think about your training when you're on the road like that? Because we tend to try to go nuts equally as if we were at home. But, you know, you're a professional who's doing extremely well. Are you changing anything when you train on the road?
No.
Nothing.
No.
Good.
Actually, exact same. I mean, the I always try and time it so that I don't have to train legs the first day I'm landing somewhere.
Okay, that's exactly what I do.
It's like if I know I'm going to have to train legs like the first day, I'll alternate things and train the day before I leave. Because like, I don't want to be like having to fly all day and have my, you know, maybe my meals are, you know, a little off timing. Like I'm not missing them, but say like I, you know, have a big gap between them where I'm, you know, not, don't have food or, you know, your sleep's a little messed up or, you know, you're a little dehydrated, whatever it may be. You know, so I always want to make sure I get the leg training out of the way. Like I don't want to be doing that day one or, you know, when you're traveling. Other than that, I mean, I try and train the exact same. I mean, I honestly kind of like training on the road. I mean, you get to train at different gyms. I mean, you get to meet some new people. You know, I kind of like it. So, I mean, I know a lot of guys find it very difficult. You know, but I've never had any issue like getting in like an intense mode, like not in my own like habitat, you know,
right.
I can go where it is. I can put my headphones in, you know, put my head down and get a good workout in. So yeah, I mean, that's just don't want to be doing legs day one.
No. Well, Dusty and I would love to get you, over to England and get you down to Dino's during Body Power or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah.
Thanks for coming on, Ian. We really appreciate your time. And, you know, you're one of the guys that just has such a bright future in this sport. And I know you probably hate words like bright future and all that stuff. Cause you're like, I'm already here, bitch. But, I think there's a lot more in store cause you just keep getting better, man.
Thank you. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks, guys.
Later. So that was nice to have Ian on, Dusty. Guest one.
Absolutely. No, it was awesome first episode, and I felt it flowed really well, and I'm hoping that more and more people will see another side to what Ian brings to the table and kind of his journey, because I feel like as big as he is, not as many people really realize how quick he shot up the ranks here.
Yeah, no, man, it was good to have him on. It was good to see him come from that first show that I saw him at, you know, when he was just 21, because he just exploded into it, and now it's just getting out of hand. So, you know, happy to have him on. Definitely thanks to Ian. Check him out on Instagram, IFBB Ian. Make sure you spell the Ian right, IAIN. And, of course, Dusty Hanshaw, 08, and Rep 300. That's how it goes here on It's Just Bodybuilding. Is that it for episode two, Dusty?
That's it. Make sure you guys just keep in mind where to see everything. Obviously, if you're wanting to grab the audio version, Advices Radio will be where you're going to pick that up. And then for now, you'll still be going to my YouTube, Dusty Hanshaw, to catch the YouTube version of these podcasts. and we'll work on the next 4 or 6 weeks transferring that over to our own place, because I have a feeling people are going to be wanting to fill these up. And as much as I love stealing them on mine, I think we need our own little home.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. We'll get a YouTube page up and start kind of directing traffic. So, but we appreciate all the feedback. Let us know what you think of the interview with Ian. Let us know what, you know, you would have liked to hear more of. You know, we could have talked about anything, like we said. So we appreciate it. Thanks, Dusty. Remember, guys, it's just bodybuilding.
So fly, a young, lovable, humble type of guy. And everything is to the back with a little slack. Cause inside out, it's wiggity, 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 whack. I come stomping with something pumping to keep you jumping. R&B, rapping bullcrap.